For us, here it is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance day. Appearance day. Appearance day. Disappearance. Disappearance. And they actually disappeared on the Western calendar on the somewhere between December 31st and January 1st. Video is perfect. Perfect. All right. And so I thought we would speak about him, and perhaps by Krishna's arrangement we can tie in the topic. And the topic we have, what happened in the last class, for those of you who weren't there, we were discussing the, you could say in a sense, we were discussing some of the things that weren't working in terms of how ISKCON was establishing the gurus after Prabhupada left, things we didn't understand. And then also the challenges disciples had in understanding their position. But mostly we focused on the challenges of the gurus. But last class we spent a lot of time on what it means to be a disciple. You know, more, and I was trying to explain the essence of it more than the externals, you know, like. And probably if you listen to the class, you'll see in just the very fundamentals of guru-disciple relationship, and what we see, or what we have seen, is a lot of times people will take a guru because they think that's a kind of a landmark in their spiritual life, just to have initiation, but they don't understand the commitment there. Then we told a story last week that Prabhupada initiated a devotee, and the next day he left, and when they told Prabhupada, Prabhupada said he was never my disciple, because Prabhupada understood that he never understood initiation and never really accepted that role. So he said he wasn't initiated. So you could be initiated externally, but internally you've never accepted the role of disciple and the commitment, the real commitment, and the essence of the relationship. So we discussed that disciple means to be disciplined, to be controlled, and some people want to grow, but perhaps not, they don't want to be controlled. And then we also discussed how sometimes devotees are very enthusiastic in the presence of their guru, not enthusiastic in his absence. So we spoke a lot about how that relationship develops in his absence. And we told the story of one of my godbrothers who never met Prabhupada. And he said he didn't really have a close relationship with Prabhupada when Prabhupada left, because he joined in 1976. He said he never saw Prabhupada. You know, I guess for you today, that sounds strange, because probably you took your spiritual master after you met him, or at least you met him online. You had some interaction with him, virtually or real. This devotee never met Prabhupada. He met him through his books, and he met him through his recordings, but he never met him personally. So he had really developed closeness, and he said that he didn't really feel separation when Prabhupada left, because he never felt connected. And he said, but subsequently, in the last 37 years, after Prabhupada's disappearance, that's how his relationship developed. So I thought that was a good example of showing that this is really the substance, because it all developed through hearing and through service. And he didn't have any personal association. So personal association is helpful, but not necessary. That's the point. It's not necessary, because being in Prabhupada's mind, the association is personal. If you're hearing and you're following, it's very personal. And Prabhupada said something really important, and it's hard for us to understand this unless we have the experience. But Prabhupada said, I never felt that my spiritual master wasn't with me. I never felt separation from him. And many times I told the story when Prabhupada came to San Francisco, 1970, I was there, and the temple was full of brahmacharis. It was the largest assembly. I think it's probably the largest assembly of brahmacharis. Most of the devotees in the movement were brahmacharis. It was the largest assembly of devotees in ISKCON in one place, and then thus the largest assembly of brahmacharis. And Prabhupada said, when he saw them, he was so impressed. And he said later, in confidence to some devotees, that I called my spiritual master to come see. So Prabhupada had that connection which was transcendental to the material world, that he was connected spiritually. And he also said, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, my spiritual master is always seeing my activities. I'm confident he's always seeing and pleased. So there was always this connection that Prabhupada had, as if from our perspective, Bhakti Siddhanta was alive and he was connected and he was experiencing his presence and understanding that everything he's doing, not understanding, but everything he's doing, he was doing because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur asked him, as if he were present and saying, you know, yesterday he asked me to do this. That would be more common for us, right? You'll find it less common. Why are you doing this? Well, my father told me he died 30, 40 years ago and I'm still doing it. That would be a very good son or daughter, right? So Prabhupada showed by his own example that statement that the spiritual master, the disciple and the spiritual master live forever. The spiritual man, the Vaishnavas, live through sound, and the disciple who follows lives with him. So he's teaching us that the relationship has a transcendental element which goes beyond personal association. And I think if anyone wanted to do a little analysis, not that we would do this, but if anyone did an analysis by interviewing devotees, you wouldn't find that the best devotees are the ones who have the most personal association. It's just not the way it is. It was never that way with Prabhupada. And what you will find is that in some cases, the ones who had the most personal association had the most difficulty after Prabhupada left, because that was how they related to Prabhupada, right? And people who didn't have much personal association or any, their relationship continued on that transcendental level, because it was always that way. It was always through instruction, through serving the mission. So we discussed that, but we also discussed that it's not only that. When the spiritual master is present, there is a relationship. So you can't just avoid it and say, well, it's transcendental beyond time and space, so physically I deconnect. And so Prabhupada said, no, when the spiritual master is present, you serve him physically. So, no, Guru Maharaj, I just leave you alone and you take care of yourself, because I want to serve you in separation, which is fine if that's what he tells you, but if he needs your service, then you do it personally. So, and it's not that we shouldn't minimize the personal association, because personal association is very valuable, because you get to see by example how the spiritual master lives, you get to see how he deals with devotees, you get to be in his presence, which is unlimitedly beneficial. But I think Prabhupada's point and the point of our philosophy is that's an aspect of it, but the instructions are more important, because the instructions form the essence of the relationship. And this is why we've been discussing how in understanding guru and disciple, we've been making the point, because scripture makes a point, that the relationship is based on instruction. That's the real relationship, because the instruction continues throughout one's life. So a lot of times we put emphasis on the initiation, but what continues after the initiation is instruction. And then the instruction may come from so many people, not just your spiritual master. So wherever there's guru and disciple, it's based on instruction, hearing. There are perhaps cases where guru and disciple relationship is made primarily by diksha, where one needs to be connected to the disciplic succession, and their siksha guru is not giving diksha. But the real connection will be with their siksha guru, the one who's giving them instruction and guiding them on a regular basis. So this interesting thing I didn't tell you, and I don't know if you've thought of this, but when Prabhupada left, there were some devotees who received first initiation, but they didn't receive second initiation. So then the question came, well, will they get it from Prabhupada, or will they get it from the present gurus? Because they didn't get it from Prabhupada. And so they went to Prabhupada's godbrother, Sridhar Maharaj, and he said, they'll take initiation from one of their godbrothers now, because Prabhupada's not present, so he can't give it. And then they said, well, who's... Now they have two gurus. They've been given the Hare Krishna mantra, what we call first initiation in ISKCON, and now they've been given their second initiation, Brahma Gayatri Pancharatriki mantras, from their godbrother, which was, you know, kind of a... You could say it's kind of an awkward situation, that your godbrother now becomes also your guru. So that was confusing, so a delegation of devotees went to him. They had many questions about guru and disciple. This was one of them. And they said, well, which guru is more prominent? And he gave an interesting answer, which I'll tell you 10 years from now. No, I will tell you now. Just want to make sure you're listening. He gave an interesting answer. Does anybody know what he said? Or would you, if you don't know what he said, I would like you to guess what he said. And I know what you're, and I think I know what you're going to say. And I'm going to give you a hint. What I think I know you're going to say is not the answer he gave. If that helps you. You know, what's the obvious answer? Who's the most important guru? Pollock says, the one that connects you. Well, they've already been connected. Prem Kishore says, the six-year guru. And here we're talking about formal initiation. So what's the position of your Diksha guru? Prem Kishore says, Krishna. Who's most important? Is it your guru of your first initiation, your guru of your second initiation? Or what is the relationship? I think they ask, who's more important, or how do they deal with it? No, who's more important? And he said, the one who helps you the most. Isn't that an interesting answer? In other words, he's saying where your faith and trust and connection is. So some of you said, the one that connects you, the one you're connected to the most. So you would think, well, but there's Prabhupada, and then there's your godbrother, who now becomes your guru also. So he's your godbrother. One level he's your godbrother, and one level he's your guru. And say, but how could anyone surpass Prabhupada? They can't. But your connection with that person could be stronger. Not because they're more advanced, but because that personal association, guidance on a regular basis, whatever it is. So, you know, basically his answer was, where there's the most help, where there's the most connection, where there's the most faith. And so you would naturally think the answer was, well, Prabhupada, of course. So it is not that Sridhar Maharaj was minimizing Prabhupada's position, but, you know, really, I mean, the answer is they both are. And I think his answer is you can't delegate which one is. Because just like now, you all have gurus, but some of you are not initiated by Prabhupada. So then we'd say, well, where is your allegiance? Where is your attachment? And so you could say, well, the same answer. It should be for Prabhupada, because look at Prabhupada compared to everyone else. There's no comparison. But it is where it is, and it develops naturally. Some will be more attached to their guru, some will be more attached to Prabhupada, some will be equally. Some will get different kinds of inspiration from different gurus. Jai Krishna Kirtan, Hari Bol. She says, the most important is the guru you love the most. Follow his instructions diligently and faithfully. Yeah. So this basically is an interesting instruction, because you would think the answer would be Prabhupada. Of course, Prabhupada. Who's your main guru, or who? So then we had a phenomena in ISKCON, similar to this devotee, where people joined late, they didn't have any or little connection with Prabhupada, and most of their connection was through their temple president, or particularly in many cases, through a sannyasi. And so sannyasis, during Prabhupada's time, sannyasis were the closest thing to a guru. We only had Prabhupada as guru, so nobody had the position of a guru. But sannyasi, you could say, was the closest thing, because they were spiritual authorities. So people had a lot of faith in them. And some people joined the movement late in 1976 or 1977, and they were being guided by these sannyasis, and they didn't really know Prabhupada, they didn't really know much, they just knew this sannyasi. So after Prabhupada left, many of them were extremely connected to that sannyasi, more than they were connected to Prabhupada. And the point we're making is that it's not wrong or bad, it's just the way it is. And it's not that Prabhupada would have been upset, it's just that you don't initiate in the presence of your guru. But in terms of the faith and the love someone could have for a sannyasi, someone who is a disciple of Prabhupada could have for another sannyasi, that was never bad. The Prabhupada only said that sannyasi can't initiate without his permission. So it just flows where it's natural, and that was the instruction Sridhar Maharaj gave. So that's kind of what we've been discussing. And so we're trying to balance the association of the physical presence and association in separation from the guru, and show, and they have equal, what should we say, equal, but they're both inspiring. But we have to learn ultimately how to access the association of the spiritual master through service and instruction. Because that's what's going, and because the instructions always remain. And so, like, Prabhupada is no longer with us, but he left us so many books. So he's with us in his books, so that's what remains. That he was only, like, I joined the beginning of end of 1968, at the beginning of 1970, I moved in the temple. I was initiated in March of 1970. So I came 45 years ago. Right? So of those 45 years in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada was only here 7. So what's the math? 45 minus 7 gives us 38, right? So 7 years I was with Prabhupada personally. Of that personal association, of those 7 years, maybe 50 days, you could say, 50 personal classes or morning walks or darshans, 50 times, maybe, probably, maybe 100. Okay, so 100 days is a third of a year. So in the last 45 years, I had a third of a year personal association. So you could say, basically 44 years, there was no personal association, and there was a third. So then we were talking, I believe, last week, I was saying that any Prabhupada disciple that's active in the movement, it's only because they've been able to connect on this transcendental level. Otherwise, because of all the challenges the material world offers and the challenges of stabilizing an organization, I think many devotees would have just left, maybe practiced on their own, or even given up their practice, just become discouraged. Oh, we're not doing what Prabhupada said. We find this a lot. It can be discouraging. But because they made this connection with Prabhupada, so even in separation, they feel very connected. And then you have an example of Prabhupada, which is quite interesting. Because Prabhupada got his instruction, I think. Prabhupada said he was 22, 23 when he met Bhaktisiddhanta Bhakti Siddhanta, and he was born in 1896. So he's like, I don't know when he met him. I didn't know he met him that late, 1918 or something like that. So one thing that's very interesting in Prabhupada's life is that he got the instruction, I believe he was 22 or 23, and he just had been recently married. He had one or two children. So he got this instruction, you should preach. But, you have little kids. How's he going to do that, right? But he accepted the instruction, and it was just a question, how am I going to do it? So Prabhupada, I think, sometimes in the 50s, it might have been the late 50s, is when Prabhupada took vanaprastha and left his family. He hadn't taken sannyas yet, so he moved out of home, and he moved into Gaudiya Math so he could focus. He gave up his business so he could focus on his preaching. So I think he took sannyas in 1959. So anyway, let's just use a figure of 25 years. So you're given instruction to do something, and 25 years later, that instruction is pushing you, and your whole life has evolved around that instruction. Normally, you find in normal human relationships, if you give someone instruction and they don't do it in the next 3 days, they tend to forget. Sometimes, if they don't do it that day, it gets lost. I have that experience. I ask somebody to do something. If they don't do it that day, somehow or other, it never gets done. So that's human nature. So, you know, think of an instruction you got 25 years ago. You know, how important is it to you today? You know? Your father 25 years ago might have said something. You know, you should always clean this. Now, for some people, if it's a powerful instruction, sometimes they'll say, well, I always remember that instruction. And that keeps you connected. You know, your father leaves the world and there's important instructions. I always remembered that. So, and then you're connected to your father through that instruction. So that's the example that Prabhupada is giving. 25 years later, that instruction is as vibrant and real and powerful as it was the day he got it. And Prabhupada said, I couldn't execute it, but I never forgot it. So, you know, so that's just, you know, Prabhupada's showing us, met his guru in 1922, received initiation in 1933. So then, if you met him in 1922, that means he was 28. Yeah, anyway, he was young. He was newly married. 1896. No, he was 26. So Prabhupada sets a good example for us in showing how an instruction entered his heart. He took it seriously. Took it so seriously that he actually did it. And he, you know, when did he finally come to America? 1965. So now we're talking like 43 years after he got the instruction. So now he's 43 years and he's saying, I feel my spiritual master is always with me. And he's always guiding me. So Prabhupada's showing us this example of presence, transcendental presence of the spiritual master, which he said is real. And he's saying he's always guiding me, both through his instructions and within. So then Prabhupada said, yesterday I was listening in a devotee's morning walk and said, Prabhupada, how do we get guidance from you when you're not physically present? Prabhupada said, from my books. Or he was saying, how do we, you know, if we have questions, how do we get answered if you're not physically present? He said, through my books. And then the devotee said, nice question. He said, can the spiritual master speak through the heart, guide a disciple through the heart? And he said, if your heart is pure. He said, he can if your heart is pure. So Prabhupada said that I feel my spiritual master is always guiding me. And he said in the Bhagavatam that after the spiritual master leaves, he will guide the disciple from within. So that's another way the disciple is connected, because it's like the spiritual master is like the super soul. He's like guiding the disciple. Prabhupada, please guide me. What should I do? So this is what's going to endure, because the spiritual master physically will only be here for so many years. Now, what's happening now is similar to what happened for us, because when Prabhupada came to the West, he was 70 years old. Now spiritual masters are in their 60s, get some in their 70s, and the disciples, you know, tend to be younger, generally, right, in their 20s. So then how long are you going to be with your spiritual master? Unless your spiritual master is 30 or 40, how long are you going to be? Maximum, what? On the average, 10 years, 15, 12, 6, 4, you know? I mean, for some, it's just going to be a few. So now you got initiated, you spend very little time with your spiritual master personally, and then after initiation, 2 years after initiation, he's gone. How are you going to associate with him? He can't come to Mauritius anymore. He can't come to wherever you're living. How are you going to associate? Through the instruction. So when they went to Sridhar Maharaj, he said something that always stuck with me, and it proved to be so true. He said, now that your spiritual master has left, you'll be tested to actually see if you've understood his instruction. Because in his presence, You're always getting pushed, and things seem to be much easier. You know, just do this, and you don't have to think, you just do it. When he's gone, how do I do it? Or should I do it? Is this the right time to do it? Or should we even do it anymore? Is it applicable? You have to start asking, and is this really, what's the principle behind this? You know, you start questioning all these things that you didn't have to question in his presence because he's just said, do it, it's the right thing. Okay. So we found this to be extreme, we found this to be exactly the reality, that we would question things that we thought we understood, and we realized that we didn't understand. And then we realized that Prabhupada's presence was a force behind us that was actually carrying us almost unwillingly. It was like, almost like we didn't have to do anything. So because also what's different now is that every devotee in ISKCON during Prabhupada's time was either your godbrother or godsister. There was only one guru in the whole world. So you were carried everywhere you went. It was like you had Prabhupada's sangha through your godbrothers and sisters. So you just show up and you're on the boat and the boat's moving. You know? You don't have to run on the boat, right? You don't have to push the boat. The boat is. So there was a lot of that going on. And when Prabhupada left, it was like, after a few years, it was like the boat was slowing down. And like we actually had to get out and push it, or we had to fix the engine. It was different. We really had to look, like, what is this movement, and what was he teaching us? And a lot of that energy that was pushing us, it just dissipated. And a lot of people, they jumped off the boat because they couldn't move themselves. So that's just an instruction to everyone that shows how important it is to connect through the instructions. So Krishna Kirtan is saying, he met Prabhupada in 1922. Prabhupada met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in 1922. He was given the instruction to preach at that first meeting. Prabhupada accepted him in his heart. He said, I accepted him as my guru, not formally, but within my heart. And Prabhupada didn't take initiation for 11 years. We may wonder why. He obviously didn't think that the formal initiation was the essence, so he didn't rush it. And perhaps the family situation was such that it was better to wait. We don't know. I don't know because I've never heard. Maybe somebody knows. I've never heard Prabhupada say why he waited. But I think we can conclude at least one aspect is that he already was connected. And he said, you know, I accepted him as my guru. So he took formal initiation. Perhaps also his godbrothers pushed him and said, you know, you haven't taken initiation, you should take formal initiation. He was helping the Gaudiya Math. He had, you know, he was financially helping, doing kirtans, preaching, like that. So, you know, prominent member, you should take initiation. So we could understand. But he wasn't rushing it. So he only met his spiritual master several times, personally. Such a good example, right? So here, the disciple who was most successful had only met him a few times. And many of Prabhupada's disciples who had his intimate association really found it difficult in Prabhupada's absence because they had become, their inspiration in their spiritual life came more from his physical presence than from his absence through his instruction. And a lot of those disciples came back. They went through a period where it was hard to exist without him being there, without being able to write him or see him. It's understandable, but the point is that the devotees whose association with Prabhupada was more prominently motivated by his instructions didn't have that problem at all. I mean, everyone had the problem of being separated. The biggest problem probably was not the separation, because we ultimately knew he'd given us everything in the instructions. What became a problem was what happened in ISKCON was a result of Prabhupada's leaving. So the dysfunction in ISKCON and the difficulties, it amplified our feeling of separation because it was existing because Prabhupada left. So we'd feel more separation. So when Prabhupada was here, we didn't have this problem. So we're feeling the separation, not so much from the guidance and instruction per se, but from the problems that were existing in ISKCON made us realize it was because Prabhupada left. We were young, we didn't know what to do. So that was one level of separation. But on the other level, then people were going, studying Prabhupada's books more. And then eventually, better understanding Prabhupada's instructions, cleaning up a lot of the problems, and a lot of the people who left came back. Because then they were able to connect more with Prabhupada transcendentally, because it's the only way you could connect in his separation. You can't connect personally. But also through his remembrances, Prabhupada memories, hearing about him, and at least I have this, I have to admit, an addiction I have. I have an addiction to hearing about Prabhupada. So sometimes I'll just like turn on, go to YouTube and I'll listen. You know, in the middle of a busy day, I'll just zone out for an hour and listen to my God brothers and God sisters talking about Prabhupada. And so that's another way that we remember Prabhupada. We feel his presence in association. And one day I actually did it for 6 hours. And I was drawn back into ISKCON of the 70s. I actually felt I was in ISKCON of the 70s. Felt I was present there. And I was very inspired, as inspired as I was in those days. You know, same kind of inspiration. So that connection is there, for sure. But that's what many of us had to learn after Prabhupada left. And it was a huge challenge, because after Prabhupada left, it was such a difference. I mean, you know, when a loved one dies, there's a person in your life, and then there's a vacuum. So your life's different. Even if you weren't that closely connected, but, you know, even if you have a maid that comes every day and she dies, it's like, now there's no maid, you know? It's just something changes, you know? The dynamics of your life get thrown off. So, you know, Prabhupada left and that was like, everything was thrown off. So many people had a difficult time. And then then after Prabhupada leaves, you can only connect with him through his instructions and his memories of his pastimes and his service. It's the only way you can connect. Whereas in his presence, you can connect physically and just be bathed in his darshan and basically just become inspired just by sitting and seeing him. Right? So then, now is the only way we could get his association, only way for you to get his association if you didn't meet him, is by hearing about him and hearing his instructions. So for many devotees, it took many, many years of feeling separation, perhaps giving up bhakti, being frustrated, and then finally, you know, 30-odd years later, we see so many devotees deeply connected in their bhakti and connected to Prabhupada. Because we've had 37 years to connect with Prabhupada through his instructions. Right? That's the only way we can do it. So we're actually, in a sense, better off, because we've had to understand his instructions more deeply. You might say, well, the movement's not better off. It would have been better off if Prabhupada were with us another 10 years. That's true. But in the long run of hundreds of years, it may be no different, or we may eventually be better off. We matured faster. He left us. He left when we were younger. We grew up faster. You could see it that way. But Prabhupada, I think Prabhupada's example is really good, because he wasn't a disciple who had a lot of association with Bhaktisiddhanta. You know, Prabhupada said I met him a few times. I think Prabhupada wrote a few letters and he met him a few times. In ISKCON, if you met Prabhupada a few times and you wrote a few letters, you were not a prominent, you were just a rank and file devotee, you know. But the point is, the rank and file that didn't have a lot of Prabhupada's association, now if you look at who is being successful, the most successful preachers in ISKCON, the majority are people who didn't have much association, not the ones who did. The ones who did are not doing the prominent service. Not even necessarily you will find that Prabhupada's directly initiated disciples are the ones now in ISKCON who are doing the most phenomenal service. And perhaps in a sense, yes, because they're older devotees, but in terms of a broader sense of rank and file, your management, your book distribution, your preaching programs, it's not. Of course, they're outnumbered now. But the point is, it's not because they were initiated by Prabhupada that they have special Shakti. Because they had Prabhupada's darshan, yes, and they live with Prabhupada, yeah, that's why they have special Shakti, not because of the Diksha. But you can also get that Shakti. Now, I will say that Prabhupada's disciples are special because they lived, they saw Prabhupada, and nothing can, you can't understand Prabhupada the way someone who's saw him understood. There's just things you learn that by seeing him, and you're in the movement, so you saw how he managed and ran it. So you have that, but it's not an essential advantage. It's just a bonus, and you can fly with it, you know. But it's not the essence, not the bread and butter. So anybody can get Prabhupada's association deeply and become deeply inspired and moved by it today. And as the movement goes, that's what people are going to have to learn. So the problem is that this course we're doing now, it's analyzing Siksha, Diksha, and Prabhupada's position. And so what we started out a month and a half ago, was talking about how if we don't understand Diksha properly, then we start thinking, well, you got Diksha from Prabhupada, so you're special, you're more fortunate, you're closer, you're more intimate. And we say, no. It's through his service and instructions that you relate, not through Diksha. Oh yeah, I got Diksha, but you're following his instructions better than I. So who's closer? Just because I got Diksha, am I closer? So we misunderstood the formality of Diksha as something that automatically brings one closer. And it creates a variety of problems. And we've seen many, many problems coming from that. And one of the problems that it's created is devotees' belief that they can't be connected to Prabhupada as deeply as an initiated disciple. And that's not true, because your real connection is through his service and his instruction. So you have many devotees distributing his books. They're not his disciples. And you have many people who are his disciples no longer serving him directly or indirectly. So who's more closely connected? Who's the real disciple? One who serves the mission. You know, what would Prabhupada say? Would Prabhupada say, well, because he didn't get initiated from me, he's not my disciple? I said, no, he's the real disciple because he's following. So, and then we had discussed, now if you relate that to other devotees who are physically present, you say, I'm formally initiated by this guru, and I'm deeply connected through the guidance of this other guru. Is that wrong? Is that right? What is it all about? And the actual answer is, it is what it's all about. Whatever it is what it's all about. Because wherever there's guidance, and wherever there's faith, wherever there's connection, there's guru-disciple. And it's not something that you have to write down a piece of paper. Well, I've been hearing from him for 3 months, and I have 87.32% faith, and I've been doing these two services for him. Let's add this up. Let me see. Should I add it up? I have 163 points. Let me go look at my scale. Am I a Siksha disciple? Well, if you have more than 83 points, you're a Siksha. No, it's not like that. But there's that tendency to look at that. Look at it that way. And because we isolated Diksha as the primary guru and the primary relationship, and Siksha as something that surrounds it. So in one sense, that's true, because Siksha guru should support Diksha guru. They shouldn't be in two different worlds. But at the same time, it's a natural relationship, which is why Sridhar Maharaj's answer is so intriguing. You've been first initiated by Prabhupada, you've been second initiated by someone else, you've got your Gayatri, Pancharatriki mantras, who's your main guru, whoever helps you the most? What an answer. So now, what's going on in ISKCON now is there's a move to say, look at, who's helping you the most? Or who's equally helping you? And you realize, well, it's Prabhupada. Because without Prabhupada, I don't have my guru, because he's his disciple. Without Prabhupada, we don't have all the books from which my guru preaches. And I don't have these books to go to. And I don't even have to go through my guru, Diksha Guru, to read Prabhupada's books. I don't have to go to a class on Bhagavatam. I can read the Bhagavatam. So I have, you know, Prabhupada's given direct access. If Prabhupada said, don't read my books, you must learn it from my disciples, okay, then we could say, all right, this is clear, it's your guru. You'll never have this intimate relationship. But obviously he didn't say that, right? So these books are for everybody. So where is your connection? So what What the movement is trying to do now is saying, look, you have simultaneously many connections which are very deep, or should be deep, or can potentially be deep. And you can have as many as you want, as long as they're harmoniously working together. There's nothing wrong to feel anything that's helpful for you in bhakti. Now, I would say maybe in the last 10 years or so, this mood has become, has evolved in ISKCON, where there was a time where if you felt like deeply connected to Prabhupada, they would say, oh, you're a ritvik. You say, I'm not a ritvik, I have my guru. I just feel this connection to Prabhupada. If you said, I feel a deeper connection to Prabhupada than I do to my initiating guru, I'd say, oh, you're a ritvik. You'd say, what's wrong with you? So there was a time where it was like Diksha Guru everything. And anything other than Diksha Guru, you'd be making an offense to some degree. So it's evolved, and one of the nice things about it evolving is, and the way it evolved is that it's just saying, everything's okay. Prabhupada, is it okay if I'm attached to this person? Everything's okay. As long as the person's guiding you in Krishna consciousness and helping you, why would it not be okay? You know? It's kind of like you have a tutor. You go to university class, but you have a tutor. Is it okay to have a tutor? Does he help you? Oh, he helps me a lot. He's actually better than my teacher. Oh, so why are you asking if it's okay? But 20 years ago, you'd ask if it's okay because you felt you were offending your teacher. But he's teaching you what your teacher taught you. So, yeah, okay, we have more time. If you have any questions, you can ask, and I'm going to read what's here also. You had a question? No. So, okay, so Venu and Atmananda, I don't know if this question's coming from them or it's coming from, they're translating into Spanish. It may be coming from another devotee. Diksha and Siksha both are important at the same level, but one can feel more trust with Siksha Guru because one can be more near of him, but both are important. So what Venu Rati is saying, she's saying that sometimes your Diksha Guru may be distant, physically distant, you know, in other parts of the world, or maybe distant, I don't know how she would say, I don't know if you want to say emotionally distant, or just maybe a little less, I think, participating less in your life than a Siksha Guru who's participating more in your life. And so she's saying that in some cases, well, this is in her case. It's not universally true, but it's definitely true in her case. And she's saying the Siksha Guru, he's there, he's more involved in your life, so the relationship becomes closer just by proximity and because you're being helped. So that's the whole point, that it's normal and it's natural. And it doesn't necessarily have to minimize the relationship you have with your Diksha Guru. It just broadens it. And if the relationship you have with your Diksha Guru is still, this is my guru, this is the one who connected me with Krishna, I have all respect, I serve him, honor him, I hear from him, and I have this other relationship, which may be, at this point in my life, even more significant. At some point, Venu, you may feel this way with Prabhupada, by his mercy. You feel so deeply connected, and that's the most important. So, wherever you're connected, whatever helps you the most, that's perfect. As long as it doesn't obliviate the relationship you have with your Parama Guru or your Diksha Guru. It should strengthen it. And now your Diksha Guru, he's happy because you're making advancement and you have taken shelter of one of his godbrothers. So he's happy. So everybody's happy. So it's nice. So Krishna Kirtan Dasi says, thanks for the nice presentation. Yes, those who were faithful to Prabhupada's instructions are still active in ISKCON. And those who were mainly attached to his physical presence had problems when Prabhupada left his body, as they were not fixed up in following his instructions. Yeah, it's such a good example, history. You know what they say? History repeats itself. You know, you have to learn from, what's that saying? If you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. So it's such a good example that many had difficulty because they're only attached to the physical association. So we have to learn something properly. And she says, yes, that was his realization when he studied Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. Prabhupada read, there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita that one should have vyavyasika, fixed determination. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, yeah, you should take the instruction of your guru as your life and soul. So then Prabhupada read that and said, this was the catalyst that got him to come to America. And so you see this when Prabhupada's coming to America. What's the most valuable thing that he's coming with? You could say, well, he brought the Bhagavatam. You could say, well, the most valuable thing is that he's a pure devotee. But really, what was the catalyst? What moved it all was the instruction of Bhaktisiddhanta. Or you could say, is the instruction of what Prabhupada brought was Bhaktisiddhanta's instruction and Prabhupada's determination to follow it. That was the most valuable thing he brought, right? Because really, Prabhupada was bringing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to America. He actually brought him. So that's the sense. The real wealth, even beyond the Bhagavatams that Prabhupada bought of the holy name, was his own determination. And obviously, that instruction of Bhaktisiddhanta was enthroned in his heart. That's what was motivating everything. And, you know, I don't know if you're aware of it, but the early days for Prabhupada were extremely difficult. He had translated Bhagavad Gita and it was stolen. The whole manuscript was stolen. And they had bought him a dictaphone machine or a tape recorder. And that's what he was using to write. And all the lectures were being, the live lectures, the classes were being recorded. And that was stolen. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine you know what it's like when your hard drive crashes and someone says, did you back it up? And you say, no. And they look at you like, does your brain work? You didn't back it up? Well, I was going to back it up, and I backed up some of it, but I can't find where it's backed up. You know, and then just like, you know how devastating that is. You just lost everything on your hard drive. So imagine, you wrote a book and you lost the manuscript. It was stolen. Why would anybody steal it in the first place? But anyway, so Prabhupada said that, I mean, you could understand, he said this, and you could understand also that instruction from Bhaktisiddhanta to spread Krishna consciousness was the only thing keeping Prabhupada here. Because externally there was nothing happening and it was just difficult. So there was nothing to keep him here. So you see how connected Prabhupada was with Bhaktisiddhanta. That one instruction, preach in the West, was the thing that kept Prabhupada in New York through all that trouble. I mean, it's such a great story. It was just like discouragement. And then having to deal with people who didn't know about Krishna, who were smoking, this and that, you know. Just really, really tough. You could imagine. Could you imagine? We say, go out and preach in a country where there are no devotees, and the only people you're going to preach to are hippies who are exploring drugs and sex. That's who you're going to preach to. And you have no God brothers helping you. And you have no money. And you don't even know where you're going to live. So what's going to keep you going? The instruction of your guru. That's it, right? If you don't have that, you're going to give up, isn't it? So I think one of the things we learn from this is that if we don't enthrone the instruction of our spiritual master, the instruction of Prabhupada in our heart, then when things get difficult, where's our strength? Where do we get our strength? Prabhupada told me to do this. Just like so many things we do, we don't want to do. Right? You want to chant 16 rounds today? You want to stay up late at night chanting your rounds? No, I'd rather sleep. Why are you doing it? My guru told me. Prabhupada told me. I do it. Not that I want to. I mean, ultimately I want to, but in the particular moment, I don't want to. So today is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance day. But whenever you talk about disappearance of the spiritual master, you really don't talk about disappearance. It's a contradiction. It's really to say it's his disappearance day is what you say in English. What's the definition of oxymoron? paradox? It's a supreme paradox. Because to say it's his disappearance day would mean to invalidate his instructions, because he lives through his instructions. And one of the things you experience on the disappearance day of any great acharya is you discuss their activities, and then you realize that they're alive through their remembrances, and they're alive through their instructions. So it's a real paradox, it's a really ironic festival. You're talking about disappearance, but nobody feels the disappearance. And then you celebrate through kirtan. So if it was actual disappearance, why would you be dancing? So what are you celebrating? You're celebrating the pastimes of this great personality. You're celebrating, I mean, in our case, we're celebrating that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta created a Srila Prabhupada. So we are connected. And I was thinking this morning before class that you might have the question, well, how can we serve Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, or should we serve, or, you know, what's our service? And I don't know if you're aware of the history of ISKCON. We might have spoken about this in some of these classes, but when Prabhupada came to America, his first desire was to establish Gaudiya Matha in America. That was his original intention. He didn't want to start a separate movement. But at a certain point, there was really no choice, because they weren't supportive, and it wasn't going to work. He realized, you know, he tried to get help, but at a certain point he realized, I'm on my own. So I have to form my own organization. And this organization is not functional enough to support what we need to support here for the preaching in the West. So he formed ISKCON. But really, if you look at ISKCON, it's really, you could look at it in a sense as a branch of Gaudiya Matha. That's, or at least you could look at it in Prabhupada's mind as, this is just a reinvention of the Gaudiya Matha, or the way the Gaudiya Matha should have been, and it wasn't. And so, in that sense, we see that what Prabhupada did by establishing ISKCON is establish an organization in the way that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wanted the Gaudiya Matha to be. So in that sense, I say it's like a Gaudiya Matha. And so in that sense, by serving ISKCON, you're serving Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, because now ISKCON became the vehicle to fulfill the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So serving ISKCON, you're serving Bhaktisiddhanta. And one proof of this, or example of this, is that Prabhupada once asked us to distribute books, and he said, this was, my spiritual master pushed me to do this, and then he said that if you do it, you'll get double blessings. And what he meant is that by doing it, you're serving Bhaktisiddhanta. So you get his blessings, and you get my blessings. So in that sense, by pushing on Krishna consciousness in so many ways, we're being doubly blessed, because we're getting his blessings. So anything we do to push on Krishna consciousness, especially within ISKCON, because that's the vehicle that Prabhupada established to bring it worldwide, which was the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta, that becomes direct service to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. So, we're going to read a few other comments here. Prabhupada sent his books, the law books, for the next 10,000 years. When our heart is pure, we have a sincere desire to please our spiritual master. We are guided in the heart through the Vaishnavas around us. Yeah, so Prabhupada's there to guide us. That's the point. And you take responsibility in ISKCON. Now you're directly engaged in spreading his movement. He'll guide you, because you're like his right hand. He has to guide you. The main problems for us were the deviations of our new leaders in ISKCON. Yeah, so I'm reading back, so we're back like 15 minutes back. And Madhava Preeti says she also likes to hear about Prabhupada like I do. She has that same addiction, probably. Krishna Kirtan says, Prabhupada's books are so perfect that by studying them deeply, you are at Prabhupada's lotus feet and in the Lord's presence. Amazing, Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita especially. And the other thing, was that Prabhupada, he understood us and he knew what we needed. So he's like spoon-feeding us the philosophy, just in the dose and in the the dose and the thickness or the consistency that we need. Krishna Kirtan says, so now we know many devotees who were initiated by devotees who fell down were situated properly when they were given diksha. They are taking shelter of Prabhupada mainly. Can he say he is Prabhupada's disciple? He's a siksha disciple. But they're still initiated. If they're guru, they're still initiated by their guru. But now, but like a lot of times, they'll say, who's your guru? And say, who's ever helping you the most? Right? So now, in this case, it's kind of cut and dry. Your spiritual master was bona fide, he initiated you, and then he left. Your initiation is bona fide. Do you need to be reinitiated? No. You might want it as a to connect with your siksha guru, to feel better. You don't absolutely need it. So let's say in the case where you don't take it, your guru has fallen. And even if he comes back to ISKCON, and some of them have, you may feel no trust in or no connection to take instruction. You may. And it is possible that relationship could even be reawakened. You say, I feel that connection deeply. But if there's not a connection there because of a lack of trust, or in this case, you are getting so much from Prabhupada that you don't feel that connection really helps you, then she's saying, can Prabhupada be your guru? And the answer is yes, he's your siksha guru. But the point is, we make this distinction between siksha and diksha. So it's like, if Prabhupada's my siksha guru, it's different than if he's my diksha guru. But what we're trying to say is that so many diksha disciples are not doing well, and so many of Prabhupada's siksha disciples are doing well. So they're actually better off by their own doing, by their own choice, by their own faith. So if you have absolute faith in Prabhupada, how is he anything other than your guru? But we always keep making this distinction between siksha and diksha, and that's where we get, but he's not, I didn't get it. Oh, Prabhu, you're so fortunate, you're initiated by Prabhupada. Not any more fortunate than you. I have the instructions of Prabhupada, you have them, so whoever takes those is most fortunate. And you have to see it that way. You can't see that your fortune is, okay, we were initiated by Prabhupada, that is a great fortune, no doubt. But is it a greater fortune than you have? Just because you didn't see him? Now you're seeing him through his books, through his service. Do we really have a greater fortune? In the material sense, the answer is we do have a greater fortune. In the spiritual sense, I don't think it's greater. I mean, we have the fortune of serving him. Okay, we have that greater fortune. We could serve him personally. We got all these personal instructions. I got instructions that you won't get in his books. Okay, I have that fortune. But does that mean you can't be pure and go back to Godhead? No. You know? It's kind of like you're raised in a wealthy family, so it's a little easier for you to become successful. I'm raised in a poor family. It's going to be harder for me. I have to take loans. I have to figure out how to get financed. I have to learn how to do it. Your parents already have the business. They already know how to do it. Does that mean I can't become richer than you? No, I can't. It's something like that. So this is the point. See, now here's an important point, which I think we need to just, because Krishna Kirtan's bringing up this point, is that can someone say they're Prabhupada's disciple? And the answer is yes, but you can't say you're the diksha disciple. So this is where the Ritvik problem comes. No, you can say you're Prabhupada's disciple. You're his diksha. How can you say you're not? I can't say you're not, but you're not his diksha disciple. And you don't. And so the problem with the Ritvik is they believe you have to be his diksha disciple. That makes the connection. Like if you're not his diksha disciple, then if you take diksha from somebody else, then your relation with Prabhupada is minimized. So that's the fault. You have to take diksha, then you're connected with Prabhupada. If you take diksha from Mahatma Das, that's not bona fide, and you're not connected to Prabhupada. Why? Why are you not connected to Prabhupada? Why does one diksha disconnect you? And the real connection is siksha. Okay, you can get your Ritvik initiation, but how do you really connect with Prabhupada? You connect through his service and instruction, not through that initiation, not through that formality. It just becomes a psychological thing. Oh, I'm a Prabhupada disciple. I've talked to the Ritviks. Oh, I'm, they say he's the, they have a word for it, the original, or that Prabhupada, when Prabhupada was present disciple, were the, But it's a misunderstanding of the philosophy, and you don't, you know, whatever they're trying to achieve in terms of their connection and fidelity to Prabhupada, you achieve by taking diksha from another guru, because that's what Prabhupada wants you to do. You don't minimize it. You actually minimize it by taking diksha from Prabhupada, because he never asked you to do it. And you, so that's an important point. Okay. So Venu says, never take sannyas. Please never take sannyas, because the Matajis couldn't be as near as you as for to have a relationship father-daughter with you. Yeah. But maybe some Matajis would rather have a sannyasi as their guru. So you have both problems. Well, what we'll do, Venu, when it's time for me to take sannyas, we'll take a vote from all the disciples. All right, well, just take a vote from all the women. Well, the men also. And we'll, whatever they say, we'll do. Is that fair? Anyway, it's not going to happen soon, I don't think. But there's some sannyasis who are, they're very much like me, even though they're sannyasis. So Pollock says, what if there's a bhakti teacher outside of ISKCON which connects my heart very much, but the teaching is naturally not ISKCON-based or any institution-based, for that matter? I still try to find the balance in respecting ISKCON and Prabhupada, feeling gratitude and still finding my heart's connection. Any thoughts on that? It's an interesting question, and it will depend. I think it depends on where you want to be in your life. If you feel it important to be connected with ISKCON, to serve ISKCON, to be connected with ISKCON devotees, and if the person you're taking instruction from also feels that way. Because if you feel that way and he feels that way, you have absolutely no problem. If he doesn't feel that way or you don't feel that way, it'll gradually alienate you from ISKCON, and then the difficulty you'll have is lack of association, because you won't vibe well with ISKCON devotees, because you'll be maybe on a different, possibly on a different plane of consciousness. Then you deprive yourself of that association. So there are devotees outside of ISKCON who would not divert you from serving and being within ISKCON. So generally, you know, we say that if you stay in ISKCON, then you have association devotees all over the world. You have, there's so many advantages, and then the preaching that we're doing is unified, and that's why Prabhupada wanted us to work. But in terms of taking shelter of a guru, and, you know, generally what ISKCON GBC says, well, if you take shelter of a guru outside of ISKCON, then just stay outside of ISKCON, because it creates conflict. I think ISKCON will evolve beyond that, where you could work in ISKCON and take shelter of a guru outside, who maybe the guy has his own organization. But the GBC was saying, well, if the guru you're hearing from has his own organization, just serve there. It's more natural. So when devotees ask me this question, I answer it more on a practical level. But it's just, if you're taking siksha outside of ISKCON, you have to consider how important ISKCON is for you and how that's going to affect your relationship with the devotees and authorities and so forth within the movement. Because in some places it may affect it, and you'll be deprived of service and association. The real problem is when the instructions are conflicting and that guru you're hearing from doesn't like ISKCON. Then you're going to be conflicted, because you're going to hear things that are different. At your heart, you know, you may appreciate Prabhupada, and he may say that this isn't Prabhupada's movement anymore, and don't serve. And then, you know, so then it's going to get messy. So there's so many things to consider, you know, on a one-by-one basis. And Ellen says, and the disciple who was initiated by a devotee who fell down, still connected to Parampara. Yeah, think of it, Belen, like you get an insurance policy, right? So the person working for the company, he's a representative of the company in good standing. You got your insurance policy. Then he leaves the company. Your insurance policy is still valid. So you've been connected, because he was working for the company when you were connected. what this does, and you say, but now he's left ISKCON, he's left Krishna consciousness. Okay, that's fine. How are you connected after initiation? How are you connected before? Through siksha, through instruction. So now you go somewhere and get instruction, you connect with that person. So your real relationship now is with your siksha guru. Because your diksha guru can no longer supply the siksha you need. So therefore you have two kinds of gurus, siksha and diksha. And sometimes, in some cases, the diksha will only give you diksha, and all your siksha will come from someone else. That may happen. Right? And of course, with the internet, it makes it easier to get siksha from your diksha guru. But in traditional times, you may have gotten diksha from one, and their whole and he tells you, go take instruction from this other. He may be Babaji, whatever. Or he has respect for this other person. He feels this is the person you should work with. So sometimes it happens that way. You know. So it's like your father says, I can't take care of you. Go live with your grandmother. Go live with your uncle. So now you develop, you know, you're 3 years old. You're living with your uncle. You're closer than you are with your father. And your father's saying, I'm a drunkard. I can't take care of you. Go live with your uncle. Okay. So now you're following your father by living with your uncle. You're following your guru. Your guru may say, I never come to your country. Take siksha from this person or find someone to take siksha from. Because, you know, of course now we have internet so you can get siksha. There's books. There's so many things. But it's going to differ for everybody. So you have that leniency or elasticity. And the point I've been making, and this is my personal realization, is that if we allow relationships to develop naturally rather than artificially, forced by formality, or not, one extreme is they're forced by formality, and you think the relationship is closer than it is. You know, you think you actually have a deeper, like the people when their guru comes, they serve, and when he goes, they go. That relationship is not really deep. It's a very, you know, he's my guru's come, I have to serve. And then they go, and their life is back to normal again. So that's one extreme, where it's like, I'm supposed to serve, because I'm supposed to see him as God. It's all I'm supposed to. It's like, pay obeisances to sannyasi. If you don't, you have to fast. Oh, I don't want to fast, I'll pay obeisances. It's a formality, I have to do it. What's in your heart? Do you feel like it? No. He's a great devotee, I should pay obeisances. That's natural. Do I have to pay obeisances? Formally you do. But why are you paying obeisances? Because you want to. So, on the extreme, it's just guru-disciple becomes formality in your life. You hardly follow anything in their presence. You're Hari Bol, Guru Maharaj. And then the other extreme, on the other side, is that there is a natural connection between you and another devotee, which is as strong or even stronger than the relation with your diksha guru, but you deny it because you think it's wrong. So it's a the relationship's there. How can you deny it? It exists, right? I mean, and then why would you want to deny it? Only out of fear that you're being unchaste to your guru, or it's wrong, or you can never have that closer relationship with the siksha guru. So if you're feeling something, all those feelings translate into I'm being offensive to my diksha guru. That was 10, 20 years ago, we'd think that way. 30 years ago, definitely that way. After Prabhupada left, 100% that way. This is your guru, nobody else. There's no connection with any other guru. If you do, that's a lack of faith in me. Why do you need to go outside? So it was like each zone was their own ISKCON. And if you go to another zone, you're going outside. So that's the other extreme. Whereas if you allow things to develop naturally, so on this extreme of formality, it's got to become more natural. On this extreme, it's got to become a little more formal. Okay, formally recognize this is a real relationship. And recognize this formality for the essence of it. It's, you know, what is the essence of this? If you don't get the essence, then it's just, you know, you're a fly-by-night guru, a disciple. You're a Hari Bol. What Bhaktisiddhanta called Dandavat Prabhus. They're always paying obeisances to him. But not really of substance. You know? So let's just finish. So Venu says, I love so much my Diksha Guru, and I miss to have a little more near relationship with him. I don't want to miss you also. So yeah, so Venu has two gurus that she loves very much. Krishna Kirtan says, the disappearance day is the biggest festival of remembrance of Sri Guru and Srila Prabhupada. Said it's the day when the disciples should honor the most prasad and feel the closest. Yeah. There's something, if someone leaves, passes on today, is it auspicious? Yeah, it is. One of the things that I don't know if you're aware of is that I was told that traditionally in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, the appearance days were not celebrated, only disappearance days were celebrated. And the reason is, the idea of the disappearance is that you've lived your life and now we can glorify you. Of course, on the appearance day, we do glorify because they've lived their life. But the disappearance day, so now he's disappeared and you have his whole life. He's left his whole life of teachings and activities and you can glorify him. So that's the idea. So bigger, supposed to be bigger than the appearance day. So Vidya says, thank you. I have more and real appreciation for many devotees now. Good. You already had the appreciation, I'm sure, but we need to clarify these issues so that appreciation can be allowed to grow and blossom without feeling guilty or it's wrong or, you know. But we'll see, the point what we're making in this series, it's worked in two ways. It's worked in your relationship with other people wasn't growing as deeply as it could, and your relationship with Prabhupada may not have been growing deeply as it could because everything got focused just on the Diksha Guru. And the other part of your garden wasn't growing. Yes? You agree? You understand? Yeah. Krishna Kirtan, the relationship father-daughter is forever, even in your guru takes sannyas, you'll still be able to approach your guru with your husband. Serve him and ask questions. Yes. And every guru is different, so every guru will have different ways they deal with their daughters. Thank you for your democratic approach, very sweet. We'll take a vote, yeah. This is like, it's like Mahaprabhu, you know, he would say, I want to go to Vrindavan, I need permission from my devotees, I won't do anything unless you ask. So that's, yeah. And Pollock says, this is already the case anyway. What, you don't relate to ISKCON? Well, if you're already outside of ISKCON, yeah. If you're not within ISKCON, you're already outside, then hearing from someone outside is not a problem because it won't create friction within because you're not within. What do you mean, Pollock? ISKCON has already written you off or you already have written ISKCON off or it's mutual? Vidya says, taking initiation from someone outside and learning from inside ISKCON is called non-secularism. Is that correct? Well, I think, you know, you have two levels of problems about the inside and outside of ISKCON. So when people ask me this question, you can answer it on the level of, well, if the person you're hearing from is preaching pure Krishna consciousness and it's inspiring you, that's good. But now you have the organization to deal with that organization may not respect this person because this person left ISKCON, or maybe the person even said some ill things about ISKCON. And now you're listening to this person, and what you're getting from this person is pure Krishna consciousness, and you're inspired. But now you're trying to integrate within ISKCON, and this person is persona non grata. Or if not persona non grata, just he's outside ISKCON. So within ISKCON, the structure, if you hear from someone outside of ISKCON, then you're not so much welcomed. So I'm answering it on two different levels. One level is, how is it for you personally? And the other level is, how is it for you if you want to be integrated within ISKCON? So you have to consider, you know, this kind of relationship. It's just it's reality. And now ISKCON will evolve over the next 10,000 years. And so maybe today, this guru, if you're too much connected with this guru, then, you know, in your particular temple, they'll just give you a hard time. In the temple down the road, they won't give you a hard time. In the ISKCON 500 years from now, absolutely no problem. The ISKCON today, maybe it's a problem. So you have to consider all these things because you really, in many places, your only association is going to be ISKCON devotees. And, you know, if you're hearing from someone who ISKCON devotees don't appreciate but inspires you. You have to take that in consideration. So you see what I'm saying? You have two levels. One level is just the pure guru-disciple relationship. Wherever you have trust, wherever you're hearing kata, which is bona fide, yes, hear it. Now, some of the kata you hear will not be spiced the way Prabhupada spiced his kata, and that's another issue. And that can also be problematic, because Prabhupada very carefully spiced it for us, and sometimes we may hear from others whose spicing is different, and we can't digest the way they cook. They use too much ghee. It's too esoteric, and it doesn't have all the vitamins and minerals we need. That's the best way I can explain it. I mean, that's my experience. It's like, there's too much cream in it, and there's too much sugar in ghee, and there's not enough sabji and dal and rice. And so you're not, you know, if you have enough sabji, dal and rice, if you've already eaten enough, then when you get the dessert, it's fine. But if dessert is just your main meal, you're going to get sick. So we have to understand that Prabhupada presented Krishna consciousness in a way which is very balanced. And so sometimes that's a danger that at least I've seen. This is my personal opinion. People may not agree. That some devotees, they're getting too much dessert and they're not eating a balanced diet and their Krishna consciousness is not balanced. And they're young devotees, 5-6 years, and their level of kata is way beyond anything Prabhupada ever preached publicly and way beyond what Prabhupada predominantly wrote in his books. So that's something to consider. Now, I'm not saying everyone outside of ISKCON will preach this way, but some do and some don't. So, as a consideration. So I'm very attached with my three gurus, Diksha, Siksha, and husband. I've learned that each one is very special, and I'm approaching each one with my heart and my trust of service. Wonderful. And I know that I have to work much more. Yeah, that's perfect. You know, why one is minimized? Because you love, you know, I love my uncle. Does that mean I don't love my father? No, I only have, 100 points of love, so I love my uncle 60, now I love my father 40. No, Krishna consciousness is transcendental math. You love your uncle 100%, you love your father 100%, you love your teacher, you can love everybody 100%. Love your husband 100%, love your guru 100%. Now what you get sometimes is people love their guru so much they end up divorced because they don't even serve their husbands, they just serve their guru. You know. So that's immature, isn't it? You know, why one should minimize the other? I serve my Siksha guru, all right, forget my Diksha guru, serve my Diksha guru, forget my Siksha guru. I mean, that should be a personal choice based on relationship, not based on formality. Because he's my Diksha guru, I don't serve my Siksha. Because he's my Siksha, I don't serve. No, it's got to be real for you, where your affection lies, where your heart lies, where your connection is. And also how much time you have. You only have so much time, so you know. You know, I'm serving my husband 23 hours a day. I have no time to serve my guru. No, you know, so you tell your husband, I need to serve my guru. It's out of balance. I only serve my guru, I don't serve my husband. That's out of balance. Krishna Kirtan says, we have the example of Bhakti and Vanessa in France who chose Diksha from Pran Krishna Goswami at Radhakund and who came back to serve at New Mayapur. She's now enthusiastic to study Bhakti Shastra. So she's integrated within ISKCON with the Bhakti leaders, and it's not preaching, glorifying her guru around. Yeah. So the local leaders are welcoming her, even though, yeah, that's nice. She was worried about that after accepting Diksha outside ISKCON. So it seems it depends mainly on your mood and attitude and the mood and attitude of a local temple, because I think it's great when it can be integrated. And I think it really is balancing for people who get initiated outside of ISKCON to be within ISKCON, because it creates a balance. So here Pollock says, I mean an alienation. Is there any way? Because my view is not totally harmonious with ISKCON view. So either I change my view or there is alienation. I have a lot of places to open in, but this much I know about my nature. On many levels I agree and can cooperate. I'm just not into institution and fixed rules and regulations and practice. Don't totally agree in essence. I agree mostly. So then, follow what you can. And Palak, follow what you can and live with the results that you create. Right? So you will see in time whether your attitude is helpful or harmful. and do service, cooperate on love you can. If you don't agree with some things and you don't feel in your heart, you can follow or practice. You know, see, I don't think that's a problem. I think the problem is people being critical. Like, if there's some things you don't agree with, so you maybe you don't participate, but you don't publicly criticize, you don't voice your opinion to everybody. They'll say, can you do this? And you'll say, personally, I don't get so inspired by that. I prefer to do it this way, so I'm not going to come. Okay, it's fine. No problem. So then you're okay. So the main thing is you don't want to get in this position where you're hearing from people outside of ISKCON and it's making you critical of devotees in ISKCON, because that's dangerous. And it, you know, to me, I look at the situation, if you're hearing from a guru and that guru is bona fide and genuine, that guru will not say anything that would cause you to create offenses to anybody. And if that guru is causing you to create offenses to devotees in ISKCON, I would reconsider if you actually want to hear from him, because that's going to undermine your spiritual life. And those people who have left ISKCON, who are intelligent and smart and deep, they will never instill a seed of criticism within you. Just like if you want to hear from someone outside of ISKCON, I don't want to criticize that person. I only want to say, this is what's going to happen with ISKCON, or this is what you need to understand. This person may be preaching on a very high level, which is not what you need to hear now. Is that the person you want to hear from at this point in your spiritual life? I didn't say what they're preaching is wrong, but you have to be careful that what you're hearing is not turning you against ISKCON, because that will harm your spiritual life, for sure. Right? So you have the practical, we all want to work together, maybe we can't, okay, we accept that. These devotees have gone outside of ISKCON, they can't integrate well, ISKCON won't allow them to integrate, they have differences of opinion, maybe if we're more mature we could integrate, but this is a situation we're dealing with now. So just don't make offenses. Participate in ISKCON on the level you can, on other levels you can't, follow the rules you can, and advance gradually, that's fine. Is that okay? Now, having said all that, I wouldn't make a good GBC or temple president, because as a good GBC or temple president, you kind of have to make it black and white, because you kind of have to keep people in the organization or push them out. That's the condition ISKCON is now. Now, in the future, it may not be that way. There may be an area where people can feel comfortable and not be exactly black and white. And I think we've come further from the early days. So we'll still, I'm sure in the future. You don't know. Maybe good ISKCON devotees today, 10 years from now, will have left ISKCON. And you'll have a whole group of like really good ISKCON devotees who just say, I had to leave to do what I had to do. And then the leaders will say, well, is there any way you can be within ISKCON? And I said, yeah, just make me a sister organization, but I can't work under the jurisdiction of the GBC because I don't agree with this. And they say, okay, that's fine. They say, what are you preaching? I'm preaching this. And they'll say, okay, that's fine. Just don't say this because it will undermine the trust of devotees in ISKCON. Okay, so we make some agreement. Now ISKCON is, you know, it's more multifaceted. It may come to that in the future. Some devotees have proposed that now, but now doesn't seem to be the right time. So I think if you're careful, Pollock, and how you approach everything, then you have two things. You want to maintain your spiritual life and you want to help other people. And you want to figure out the best way to do it. So most devotees figure out the best way to do that is to work with an ISKCON because it has the best structure for spreading Krishna consciousness. Some people feel the best way is to do it outside of ISKCON because I'm so restrained, I can't. And so they go. And those people obviously are individualists. Otherwise, they wouldn't leave. You know, they're self-reliant people. They can do it. They're independent thinkers. And they need that space to think independently. And within ISKCON, at least for many, that independent thinking got them in trouble. And they did make connections with gurus outside of ISKCON. And ISKCON said, cut those connections. They said, no, I can't cut. And ISKCON saying, if you can't cut, you can't be in ISKCON. So then they left. So it's not even that all of them wanted to leave. ISKCON just said, if you're connected with this Gaudiya Guru, you have to be outside. So that they didn't have a choice. So it's an evolving process. This whole lecture series is all about the evolvement of how ISKCON is growing in this guru-disciple thing, and how difficult and problematic it can be. And what we're discussing here is just an example. Pollock says, I agree. Good. Madhava Preeti says, Vaishnavapara is very bad. Anybody who is outside and criticizes ISKCON devotees. Yeah, most of the Vaishnavapara comes from us criticizing people who leave ISKCON, people leaving ISKCON criticizing us. It's mellowed down a lot. 20 years ago it was very intense because we were trying to keep our troops, and they were trying to pull troops out because they thought ISKCON was failing, and there was a lot of criticism. And then the GBC said, look, if you want to be with another guru outside of ISKCON, it's better you go, because it creates harmony within ISKCON. We're all working in one way under the GBC. If you don't want to work under the GBC, if you want to follow a guru who's not working under the GBC, then go and help their organization. There's probably a better way to do it, like Krishna Kirtan is saying, with this devotee who could integrate within ISKCON. That's better. But each temple is going to have to decide, because some temple president may say, no, I don't want anybody, because you'll pollute. Or they might say, this devotee grew up in this temple, and then she took initiation outside. We know her. We know what she's like. We know she's not going to disturb anybody. No, please stay. You're one of us. It's going to be different. But that would be an ideal, I think, to strive for, that you can integrate people. I mean, that's what we're doing now. We're integrating many gurus, ISKCON gurus, in one place. Maybe you can integrate a few outside. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. It's difficult. Usually it doesn't work. But it may be possible in some cases.